I was once speaking with His Holiness Kadamba Kanan Maharaj, and we were talking about different gurus in ISKCON. And he said, every guru is coming in with a special gift. And so we were going through different gurus. And then he came to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And he said, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's special gift was that he was deeply, deeply reflective. And Maharaj said that the disciples carry on that legacy. And he said that the disciples of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, they've continued that legacy of being very thoughtful, very deep, very introspective in their Krishna consciousness. And we're blessed with the association of many of Maharaj's disciples here in the UK and I've also abroad. And so we really get that from you. So I feel really fortunate to be with you all. And in the time that I have, what I'll try to do is share some thoughts, but I'm going to try and open it up pretty quickly because I think it will be really nice if we can have a little bit of a discussion as well. I just need to be clear. Am I going to for 35 minutes, is it, or 30 minutes?
No, it's carry on for 35 minutes, yeah?
35? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So I'll speak for 20 and then I'll open it up. So thank you so much. Om Gyan Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj ki jai. Today I was given the topic of the 12 qualities of a spiritual warrior. And to go through all of the 12 qualities in this time will be rushed. But what I do want to share with you is just this concept of spiritual warfare. I mean, if there's something Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is like, he could trademark in the world, it's being a spiritual warrior. When I was at university, we would have university festivals and every festival became spiritual warrior, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj actually attended many of those festivals himself, and we were blessed with his association. But spiritual warriorship always fascinated me because it gave a whole different kind of approach to religious or spiritual life. When you talked about being a spiritual warrior, there was a sense of urgency. When you talked about being a spiritual warrior, there was a sense of adventure and excitement. When you talk about being a spiritual warrior, there's a feeling of contribution and change and making a difference. And so I was always fascinated by the concept of being a spiritual warrior and fighting for a higher cause. And so I'm going to reflect a little bit about what spiritual warriorship means in the age we're living in today based on Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's teachings. And when I share this, I'm sure it will become apparent to each one of us on this call why and how Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was just such an incredible spiritual warrior. It was running through his veins. And I think that will, hopefully that will come across in the few words that I'm able to share. According to Varnashram, every Varna is fighting something. So the Sudras are fighting indolence. They're fighting laziness, lethargy. They're active and they're getting things done. So the Sudras, they fight indolence. It said that the Vaishyas, they are fighting insufficiency because they bring funds, they bring resource, they fill up the stomach of society and energize it with resource. It said that the Kshatriyas are fighting injustice. So they make sure laws are enforced. They make sure there's opportunity, equality. They make sure that nobody is neglected. But if Sudras fight indolence, if Vaishyas fight insufficiency, if Kshatriyas fight injustice, then it said that Brahmanas are fighting ignorance. They're fighting darkness. They're fighting misperception or misinformation or miscommunication of the truth. And so every Brahmana is actually a fighter. Sometimes when we think of warriorship, we only think of Kshatriyas. But actually, every Varna is a fighter because every Varna is contributing to society and pushing back against something which is holding society back. And so Brahmanas, although we may not think of them, or Vaishnavas, we may not think of them as warriors, they are actually warriors because they're fighting ignorance. And the biggest war by far in the world that we're living in today is the war against ignorance, the war against avidya, because this is really what is pervading. Today, I'm just going to share with you my screen. I hope this is okay. I'm just going to, because sometimes just to make it easier to picture what I'm saying, sometimes if I write some notes, it can just help for it to register a little bit more. There are numerous battlefields of the spiritual warrior. And these battlefields are individual battlefields, but they're also battlefields which are connected. And therefore, the first battlefield that the spiritual warrior is fighting on is the battlefield of the soul. This is the battlefield of the individual. The second battlefield that the spiritual warrior is fighting on, believe it or not, is the battlefield of the Sangha. And I'll explain what I mean by that. And the third battlefield that the spiritual warrior is fighting on is the battlefield of society. In each one of these battlefields, there is always a tendency in the world for degradation. And therefore, the spiritual warrior is coming in and always trying to create elevation, always trying to create an upliftment and progress. The nature of the world is that if there is not a force pushing up, then the nature of the world is that everything will go down. It's like the law of gravity. Everything is pushing down, especially in Kali Yuga. Everything is diminishing. People's height is diminishing. Their memory is diminishing. Their lifespan is diminishing. And the quality and purity of everything is diminishing. So unless there are warriors pushing up, then the nature is that things will go down. Now, the first battlefield I'm mentioning here is the battlefield of the soul. Because even when a soul takes up the spiritual journey, there is a constant fight with upadhis. Upadhis, you're aware, means designations. There's a constant fight with anarthas. There's a constant fight with things like distraction. There's a constant fight with offenses and avoiding offenses. So can you see? The first battlefield of the spiritual warrior is their own inner battlefield. Each one of us, like it or not, we're in a fight. There's an inner fight. There's the lower nature, which is always pulling us down. There's the upadhis and anarthas, which we thought when we came to Krishna consciousness disappeared because we got the knowledge, Jivara Swarupa Hoy, Krishna Nitya Das. But then later on, we realized, even when we came to the movement, we took on a load of different upadhis, the president of this, the leader of that, the pioneer of something else, and different designations. We realized when we came to the Krishna consciousness movement that anarthas didn't stop overnight, but they continue to persist. In fact, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we start uncovering anarthas we never knew were even there before. And so that fight is constantly going on. We come to Krishna consciousness, there's a need to overcome distraction, to overcome mechanical practice of spiritual life. And we're constantly pushing against that. And then offenses, as we know, are uprooting the creeper of bhakti. And so each one of us is a spiritual warrior in the sense that we have to fight with all of these things within us on a daily basis. And unless we do, unless we're conscious to fight all of these things and really address them and confront them, then they will take us over. And so the first thing the spiritual warrior is doing is trying to elevate on the soul level. Trying to elevate on the soul level and against all of this degradation of their own spiritual life. But then the second battlefield of the spiritual warrior is the Sangha. Because believe it or not, the Sangha, the community, the society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is a battlefield in and of itself. Because there is always the tendency for even degradation to occur, even in our own movement. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, a spiritual movement is a necessary evil. Very, very interesting terminology. He says it's necessary because without a sangha, without a community, without a society and an organization, you can't proliferate Krishna consciousness. Not just that, you can't give people the support they require. So we need it, but it can become evil. Why? Because in a sangha, there's always the opportunity that power, position, popularity, prestige. There's always the risk that these things will become more prominent than purity. And so the spiritual warrior, they're not just fighting on their own individual level to fight back against degradation, but then in the society, we each have a role to play to be a spiritual warrior in ISKCON, so that ISKCON remains holding the ideals of purity as the highest aspiration and not allowing in any of our communities for other things to become more prominent, for other things to become the aspirations that people have. Because once these aspirations become prominent, then the whole mission will drift. And we've seen this happen in the history of religion. So that's the second battlefield that the spiritual warrior is functioning on, the battlefield of the Sangha, that each of us have a contribution to make. Srila Prabhupada has brought the entire spiritual world into the material world by creating these communities. But we have to make sure we don't bring the material world back into our spiritual communities by allowing the wrong things to become promoted. And then the third battlefield on which the spiritual warrior is fighting is the society. Yes, out there. Materialistic ideology. Materialistic attachments and aspirations given to people of what the purpose of life is. Science trying to take God out of the picture, technology trying to make God invalid again, economics talking about how there's a better way to run society without any spiritual or religious interference. All of these things in society trying to take God out of the picture, the spiritual warrior has to come in. And the spiritual warrior has to say, no, the best political systems have God at the center. The best economic systems are economic systems in which we have a spiritual, a spiritual equality and a spiritual respect. The best approaches to physical health, mental health are based on an understanding more subtle than just physical. And so the spiritual warrior comes in and has to try and share with the world how spirituality doesn't just make things better, but makes people better and makes societies better. And how spirituality is scientific, how spirituality is logical, and how spirituality can ultimately give people deep meaning and vision for their life. And so when we talk about a spiritual warrior, what we're talking about is someone fighting on all three of these levels. Now, two interesting things I want to share with you. One is that according to how well every spiritual warrior is doing on the first battlefield, the battlefield of the soul, their own inner battle, that will determine how well they can do in the battlefield of the Sangha, in making a positive contribution to the Sangha, and also in what positive contribution they can make in the world out there to being a spiritual warrior out there. So the first point I wanted to make is that these battlefields are also not separate, because according to how we're doing on one battlefield, it will affect our effectiveness on the other battlefields. According to how much as a Sangha we are embracing purity, that will determine how much of an effect we can have on society. If as a Sangha we have not embraced purity, genuine spiritual absorption and Krishna consciousness, we can't really help the world. They say you can't take the world to a higher place than you've reached internally yourself. So according to our levels of spirituality, it will determine how much we can really have an effect on the world. So the first point I wanted to make is when we're thinking of these three battlefields of the spiritual warrior, remember that they're interconnected and intertwined. And the second thing I wanted to share with you, and then I'm going to open it up actually. But the second thing I wanted to share with you is that when we think of these three battlefields, it becomes extremely evident that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was one of the most illustrious spiritual warriors of our modern times. Because what Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was doing on the level of the soul to help devotees become more reflective, to help them become more introspective, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was talking about anartha's conditionings that other people were shying away from. But he was opening it all up and saying, what does this all mean? How can we empower people? How can we give everyone an opportunity to rise to the level of pure Krishna consciousness? On the level of the soul, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj as a spiritual warrior was empowering every single devotee with the tools and the introspective insights of how to really develop their inner dialogue and grasp genuine, real Krishna consciousness. Not just that, but if you look on the level of the Sangha, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj as a community builder, as someone who really came into the society of ISKCON and brought devotees together, created loving relationships, built bridges between different devotees, and how he, his famous lectures in Mayapur about cleaning Prabhupada's house and helping our movement to face issues that many times we didn't want to talk about. I think Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's role on the battlefield of the Sangha to push us towards purity was an amazing contribution. And then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj on the battlefield of the society, that's evident for everyone to see. The language that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used, the way he was able to adapt, the way he was able to use the prevailing issues of the day to bring Krishna consciousness into the equation. So I think Satyaraj Prabhu just writes it so nicely in his biography about how Tirtha means a bridge. And so Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was really creating bridges. He was really creating bridges for people to access Krishna consciousness, opening the doors to Prabhupada's house. And it was controversial and people didn't understand him. Perhaps Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was one of those people who was ahead of his times. And so his contribution to sharing Krishna consciousness in the wider society was not just powerful in the years that he was present here, but his example will inform missionaries and preachers for generations to come about how to be relevant in the world. And so when I think of spiritual warriorship, I think of how we have to be warriors on all three of these levels, and how we're performing on one battlefield will help us perform in other battlefields. And I think when we go back to the life and the teachings and the legacy of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, then we'll be able to become empowered in understanding how to become powerful spiritual warriors on the level of the soul, on the level of the Sangha, and on the level of society. And therefore, to this day, like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj fascinates me. Really such an incredible person. I had the fortune to meet him on numerous occasions. I was very young at that time, and his perhaps his brilliance was not understandable to me because of my immaturity. But one final thing I'll say about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who I think I could only say about one other person, and that other person is Mother Yamuna, who I had the opportunity to meet as well. And one thing I sense when I was around both of them is they exuded love. Like, it was just kind of inexplicable, but there was just such a love, such a acceptance, such a warm empowerment, encouragement. And I'll never forget that with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. So I feel so fortunate to be here with all of you and just to share these words. I couldn't go through the 12 qualities of being a spiritual warrior because every one is just like, it's so deep, you know. So I thought rather than trying to just run through everything, let me just talk about being a spiritual warrior in general. So these are some words. I guess we have like maybe 10 minutes or five, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. And it would be nice to hear if devotees have any reflections or corrections or questions on being a spiritual warrior and what it means to us in this day and age. Hare Krishna, thank you so much. Yes, Mitravinda, Mataji.
Yes, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for speaking and giving your reflections on Bhakti Tirtha Swami, our Guru. I, as it relates to spiritual warriorship, first of all, Bhakti Tirtha Swami was light years ahead of his time, and my reflection currently is how much he was working on and preparing us for as individually and as a society for the things that we see occurring now. The explosions, the landmines, the shrapnel left behind, our relationships. Anyone who knows anything about warfare, and I think that there's a glorification of it without a deeper understanding, which is actually necessary. Soldiers are trained to be a unit, because if I'm in front of you, then that means that you can see what's in front of me, but also you can take care of what's behind me that I cannot see. And there's everything from weaponry to techniques. And we hear so much about warfare in Bhagavad Gita. Yet at the same time, we imbibe the move of ahimsa. So the goal is to understand who we're fighting, why we're fighting. Do we have enough ammunition? Are we trained properly? Do we understand aspects of survival in warfare? And, a lot of it can be confusing to people who want to be gentle and kind and spiritual all the time, but don't know when to be the opposite or where. If we are fighting each other, if we're unkind to each other, if women are being abused and children are being abused, then we're not in the right place as warriors or as a unit in a war. Because it means the war is internal. It's in the bunkers. It's in the barracks that the soldiers live in. And that does no good for anyone. So just understanding, aspects of warfare, that there's training, there's techniques, and we know this by going to Bhagavatam class. We know this by hearing Bhagavad Gita. But in our lives, conditioning the body, understanding that the body conditioning is important, because it is, as it said in churches, synagogues, mosques, everywhere. It's mind, body, and soul. Are we even prepared to go to war? We have to consider everything. And Bhakti Tirthaswami was preparing us for things such as this in a very specific way, with references to such things. And if one has never been in a fight, it's best to practice and understand what is needed and perhaps take a punch in sparring or something, so that you're not bewildered when, something comes at you. What will you do? Your training, your studies can go out the window if you are not prepared or haven't experienced it on some level. So warrior, let's understand what that means. Let's refresh our minds as spiritualists, but remember the trilogy of mind, body, and soul. The connection, if we are going to go to war, and hopefully we can come out victorious. But it's more than it's not always pretty. I'm going to say that. So Bhakti Tirthaswami was preparing us many years ago, and we've got to get back in the trenches with it on all levels, to include understanding that we need to be kind to each other. We need to support each other, inspire each other. We can't bring in new people. We can, it obviously happens. But if we're not nurturing the people that are already here, the generals.
Yeah, just on this point, that's why when we talk about spiritual warriorship, I think one of the reasons why that kind of terminology is not appreciated in the world today is because when spiritual people talk about spiritual warriorship, they just talk about the last battlefield, the one where we're going out and we're going to change the world and we're going to do something to make the world a better place. And often when that battlefield is divorced from the other two battlefields and the spiritual warrior is not fighting on the other two battlefields, then what happens is, if that becomes the entire spiritual warriorship, it can often turn into fanaticism, judgmentalism, and all the terrible things that we hear about in the world today. And therefore, today, what I was specifically wanted to talk about, because when you say the word spiritual warrior in today's society, it's almost like, you don't talk about that kind of stuff. It's not appreciated. But when we realize that the spiritual warriorship is within on our level, is within us, and is within our own society, let's talk about spiritual warriorship there. And then when we go out into the world, I think our spiritual warriorship becomes much more genuine, much more realized, and much more powerful. And people are like, you guys are living, you're living examples of this. We're going to go with you. But I think when we don't do that work and we just go out there with it, you know, yeah, we're going to change the world, it doesn't have the same kind of impact. I think Bhakti Tirthamaraj had that kind of impact in the world because he was doing deep internal work. He was fighting internally. I mean, he's not fighting, but he was giving us that example of that the devotee has to be very deeply introspective. So,
yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Sahadev Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much, Maharaj, for being here. Please accept my humble obeisances. Glories to Guru Dev and all glories to you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Maharaj, like you rightly and beautifully shared with us the nature of the warrior. So our Guru Dev was preparing us as warriors. But as warriors, we should also know which fight we can compete in and which fight we cannot. So, personally, I sometimes feel there isn't much fight I can fight because I am so weak, I'm so feeble. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, came on earth. Lord Chaitanya came on earth. The six Goswamis came on earth. Jagat Guru Sri Prabhupada came on earth. And the world is still a mess. So what can me, an insignificant person, do to help change the world? If there is anything at all that I could do is to, like you rightly said, the soul level, the Sangha, is just to help cleanse myself. So I need your help as to how, as devotees, we're not just fighting our own battles to get better, but also helping others when we have these feelings that we are feeble, we cannot do much. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Of course, Krishna says to Arjuna, Nimita Matram Bhava Savya Sachin. I've done it already. You just become the instrument. So I think your point is well taken, that even when we're talking about spiritual warriorship, we realize on the soul level, on the Sangha level, on the society level, we do our best, but ultimately Krishna is moving it behind that, and we're just trying to be the instruments. So I like that humility that a spiritual warrior, you know, a real spiritual warrior knows that ultimately they're just an instrument in the plan, that by themselves they don't have much power. And that kind of humility is actually incredibly empowering, because then they become an instrument. One devotee used to say to me, if you're not perfect, you should be humble. And then he said, but if you're humble, then you're perfect. So that was nice, you know, because the moment you're humble, it's like, okay, now Krishna, I'm just relying on you. Like, who am I? And then when you rely on Krishna, it's like all of a sudden you're perfect, because like you're in Krishna's plan now. So I like that point. And, the other thing I'd say is that we talk here about changing the world, and we can be like, how am I going to change the world? The world is, you know, moving at breakneck speed, you know, towards like, you know, complete degradation. I always remember this story that the guru, one guru was walking down the coastline, and the tide had come in, and all of these starfish had like, they were all struggling on the shore because they'd been washed. So they're out of the, you know, environment. So they're all struggling, thousands and thousands of them. And so the guru was walking, and then he'd pick up a starfish and he'd throw it back in. And then he'd walk a little further and pick up another starfish and he'd throw it back in. And then the disciple looked at him and said, Guru Dev, there's thousands of starfish here. What, you really think you're going to make a difference? And he looked at the disciple and he said, it's going to make a difference to that starfish. So sometimes when we think about preaching, it's like one, Prabhupada said, one person. My mission will be a success. And I think when there is a sense in preaching when we can just look at the bigger picture of the whole thing and forget that there's a human story behind it, that that one person you're helping, that one individual who you connected, you changed their destiny, obviously with Krishna's plan, with Krishna's empowerment. So I think also nowadays, I don't know if I'm so powerful at all, but maybe by Prabhupada's grace, I could connect a few people and then let's see where Krishna will take it from there, you know. So we do what we can. So that was just another reflection. Yeah, while preaching to the many, don't neglect the one. Yeah, yeah. One devotee once said to me, I found it very poignant. He said, you love to preach, but do you love the people you preach to? There's a difference between loving to preach and loving the people you preach to. If you love to preach because you love the people you preach to, that's okay. But realize there could also be a kind of mentality within us that is just about impressing our ideas and gaining some kind of Ishvara above over selling an idea to someone. And so we have to be constantly aware of that. So, yeah, just some thoughts. But thank you, Sadhav Prabhu. I always appreciate your introspective inputs, which get me thinking more. Thank you. I think we've gone over time. What to say?
That's fine. Actually, I like the exchange that's going on here. A lot of sweet points that you brought up, and we can keep it going for at least 10 more minutes.
Sure. If anyone else would like, it doesn't have to be a question. Maybe you have some reflection or something else you'd like to kind of, yeah, bring to the table. Anyone? Yes, Sri Ishopanishad. Yeah, you can unmute.
Hare Hare Bol, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for the compliment of being a disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He's definitely contagious, isn't he?
He is.
Really wonderful. Yeah. But I must thank you for bringing up this wonderful realization about our own inner battlefield. We seem to think that when we came to Krishna consciousness that that everything will stop, you know, we got it really going on, you know, we can just, you know, we're definitely spiritual warriors, right? But it's amazing how many distractions, interferences, health, everything just comes into play, you know, with this battlefield that we're in. But what's so amazingly wonderful about Bhakti Tirtha Swami and what he has taught me is how to go about really appreciating Guru, Srila Prabhupada, and his Shraddha, his faith, and to just, you know, whatever he does, he just had complete faith in God, in Krishna. And that was the secret. And he was able to do that with everyone. So many people. So I really appreciate you just sharing that, you know, those different things that we come into contact with, the soul, the Sangha, and the society, because we are always interacting with them constantly, nonstop, every day. And we have to know how to put them in perspective so we can go on and reach our goal, you know, of becoming pure devotees. We all want to be that. Yeah. This is hell being in this battlefield. It's a hell. I'm a devotee of Krishna consciousness. And this is, you know, but if I can only be like a gopi, we're aspiring to be like that, but it's very difficult. So I just wanted to say thank you. And it's a pleasure and a treat to meet you. Hari Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, in the Brahmacharya Ashram, actually, we used to regularly play this lecture of Maharaj. Is it called the importance of Mangalarti? Anyway, one devotee gets heavied out in that lecture badly. It was nice. It's powerful. And in that lecture, Maharaj makes a profound point. He says that, you know, he talks about how the consciousness of every devotee in the ashram is affecting every single devotee. Mm-hmm. So that when the consciousness is very high of individuals in that sangha, then everyone's being lifted in that process. And I thought that was such a... One devotee came out of that and he said, yeah, there's a difference between a brahmachari ashram and an ashram of brahmacharis. And he was talking about how sometimes we're living together or we're residing together, but we're not living together. But there's a certain type of community that you create where you're actually living together. Like you're feeding off each other's energy and everyone is adding something into the sangha and everyone else is benefiting from that. And I think that kind of dynamic sangha and community empowers everyone to really go forth in their spiritual warriorship. So yeah, thank you for your
thank point. You Hari Bol.
Janavatsala,
Hari Bol. Okay.
Hare Krishna
Maharaj, thank you so much for your talk. It was really easy to understand, and when you just mentioned about getting into sort of like the Aishwarya mood of, you know, just impressing your ideas on the person you're preaching to, it brought up like some kind of churning in me, and I was thinking about like how we also sometimes do have that mood to express and impress ideas, but they might be like Srila Prabhupada's ideas, not our own. And then, but you can also still think like, am I loving the person that I'm talking to, or is my like excitement just like covering my vision of seeing like their receptivity or how much they can take, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's such an important point. People understand the language of the heart, the language of your sentiment. Even Krishna talks about that. He says, isn't it? Patram pushpam phalam toyam. It's not so much what you give me, but it's the bhav. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a sense in which people can really pick up on your bhav. And when our heart is in the right place, when we really want to help people, the other things tend to work out. You know, we find a way to communicate with them and get through. But yeah, it really begins with that sincere desire to help others. So, I think a lot of religious spiritual warriorship is done actually out of insecurity. Actually, many preachers are probably the most in any religious tradition can often sometimes be very, very insecure, and they use their preaching in order to almost convince themselves or feel a sense of self-worth. But we can't be preaching off that platform, because neither is it going to really penetrate people's hearts, nor is it going to be attractive to the world, nor is it really going to be sustainable in the long term. So we really have to try and preach off from a more sincere place of care, genuine care and concern. So... yeah, preach to the many, but don't forget about the one. It's really, really important. Yeah. Thank you for that comment. Okay.
The Kartanisha, you can unmute yourself and please.
I'm really so happy to be reconnected with the God family. I haven't seen them, it seems like such a long time. And Maharaj, thank you so much for your insight into Gurudev's writings, and also for me giving me clarity for today. I had to give a class with some of the young Kenyans here in Nairobi. I'm in Nairobi, Kenya. And a lot of time, the whole time I've been here, I'm not sure, okay, what does Gumaj want me to do? What does he want me to say? I get in so much anxiety that I represent him and I present the message purely without any motivations. So usually one day or two before I have to interact with the students, I have to look into my motives and make sure that what I'm saying represents my Guru Maharaj, and also give out the feeling of love and concern for those who I'm speaking to and make a personal connection. Because as I move around and as I preach, I see that devotees are hankering, as Guru Maharaj used to say, for love, for connection, for care. So the topic today in the class was devotee care. You know, how do we care for devotees, which was one of Gurudev's main ideas too, how we care for devotees. So I try to share and become an instrument for my Guru Maharaj and always keep him in the front of whatever I'm given by him to share. So I just want to really appreciate all of you. I miss all of you very much. And I hope to see you soon. And thank you so much for giving me an opportunity. I'm staying with one young Mataji. Her name is Hari Pranapriya. And she's a disciple of Bhakti Dhiradamadar Maharaj. And their family have been very kind to me and letting me share their space to do the service that I've been given. Although most of the time when I come, I'm not sure exactly what is the service he wants me to do. And then it just kind of manifests for me having come here to Africa. So I want to thank you so much for this Sangha.
Hi.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. So thank you so much, everyone. Oh, is that Sahadev Prabhu? Final point? Or?
Yes, Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is just a humble request. It is said one may go on without eating for maybe 3 weeks, but it's not so easy to go on without drinking water for that much time, except maybe one is a yogi. So the devotees of the African platform are very, very much thirsty of you, Maharaj. No, please. You do not want to become the cause of people dying. Please, we have invited you to kindly come visit us again very soon.
Sure, Hare definitely. Krishna. No, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you so much for this outstanding, amazing presentation of Maharaj's teachings, and just reminding us how each ashram has a fight, and each ashram is supposed to be fighting, not just the Kshatriyas, and really taking that clear perspective on how we're on the battlefield, whether it be the soul, the Sangha, and society. We need to start with the individual first in order to actually purify and be able to make any tangible changes. And just really reflecting on all these different spaces and places, and just how we can actually refine our relationship in service to Guru and Krishna, and definitely how we can all purify ourselves. So this, you had so many wonderful points, and it's my first time actually encountering your preaching. So this was amazing. Oh my goodness, and I loved that quote. talking about, you know, the preaching, I mean, just really kind of describing the ego. You know, are we preaching? Are we doing so any type of service, whatever service we're doing, are we doing it just to do it? Or are we actually doing it out of care, love, and true sentiment, which is the real goal of devotees? You know, oftentimes we hear that a lot of times devotees are the most impersonal people. You know, we're supposed to be the most personal. So we have the personal philosophy, but yet we seem to forget that. And at times we are the most impersonal people. So actually, like, bringing, you know, back to the center, are we actually cleaning our plate, cleaning ourselves, cleaning our hearts so that we're actually able to serve Guru and Krishna in a more personal, loving way in order to bring stimulate and uplift each environment that we're entering. So I really, really appreciated this presentation and very excited. And I look forward to future engagements. We want to hear from you again, definitely. So thank you so much, Martha.